Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah. Standing there behind the counter, willing to help with all the problems that I encounter. Helps me find Hemingway, helps me find Genet, helps me find Brett, helps me find Chandler, helps me find James Joyce. She always makes the...
No, my haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to another lockdown edition of Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika as we celebrate International Women's Day from the comfort of our homes. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison. How are you?
Oh, look, I'm doing pretty well here, thanks. Now, look, are you back in the closet?
I absolutely am. I am right back in my closet, surrounded by purple blankets. I feel like I'm at Paisley Park. It is a little bit hotter, though, than when we last did it. I think last time was in August, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And it certainly is warmer. I'm in my sunroom, but in a nod to the end of the summer, I'm surrounded by beach towels.
Oh, nice.
They're really good at noise reduction.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Do you know what? I may also be wearing my swimwear, but you'll never know. And to protect you, I've turned off my camera. I don't want to give you more nightmares. So.
It's always best in the morning anyway to have the camera turned off. I may or may not be in my Radius cardigan with a lockdown top knot. I mean, I am surrounded by clothes here, so I should have made more of an effort, really.
Yeah, I would have thought you'd make an effort.
I don't know. I heard this week the phrase groom for the Zoom. I'd never heard that one before.
Oh, yes. Now, is that where you wear your PJ pants and but then you wear a suit top or something?
You're a bit flasher up on top, that's right.
Yes. Yeah.
But I haven't bothered. I haven't bothered.
Oh, well, good on you. Good on you.
I mean, really, with so many other things that 2020 has taught us, I think we all now know that once and for all that clothes really don't make it the woman. I mean, unless we're talking full PPE for our amazing frontline workers who absolutely need that. I mean, there's so many women all around the world right now working from home, homeschooling the kids, and they're doing it all wearing the T-shirts and the tracky decks. And really, the best accessory you can have at the moment is a mask. So, you know, what's the point in makeup?
That's right. Well, I've even found that, you know, why even bother with mascara or anything?
Absolutely.
Wear glasses, yeah. Good, isn't it? Yeah, so shout out to all these brave and gutsy women we're seeing around us. Because what we're discovering, aren't we, that the women in leadership positions around the world are finding that their communities are having better COVID outbreak outcomes. So
absolutely, it's a good correlation. We're lucky to be in that little parcel.
We are, yes. And, you know, we can't celebrate everything because what we are seeing too is that women are disproportionately affected by unemployment and the loss of income and the additional caring for children and family members. So It's not easy, is it?
No, it's not. Whether you're working in the home or out the house, you know, a big shout out to all those amazing women who have been doing it tough for the last year, but you know, still doing it.
And they're still doing it, and they just keep on keeping on. I guess they don't have much of a choice. So
that's right.
To them. So, yeah, so for International Women's Day 2021, the campaign theme is, it's a hashtag, choose to challenge. So
nice.
International Women's Day, which is March the 8th, is always, it's a global day where we celebrate the social, economic, cultural and political achievements of women. And it's also always a really strong call to action to accelerate women's equality.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, more than ever, you know, as we're seeing with the challenges that we're still facing in 2021, let's get this call to action going.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, there's been some amazing progress, but always still work to do. And let's just keep it moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, getting on to some of our books in our collections, the Bridget Williams books, for a long time, have been a leader in writing on Aotearoa New Zealand's women's history. And they've got heaps in their back catalogue. But we'd like to put in a plug today for the 2016 book, A History of New Zealand Women, by Barbara Brooks. It's an award-winning title. It's really fantastic. It was researched over about 35 years, and it tells the story of Aotearoa women and the part they've all played and continue to play in building our culture, society, and our history. Now, it is one that's only available in hard copy, but you'd want that for the photography. It's a really beautiful book, and you can request it now through our online catalogue and collect it once the libraries are back open, which will hopefully be really soon.
Yeah, we hope so. And there's quite a few copies because it was an award winner. So, yeah, absolutely, you know, enjoy that one. As we are in lockdown currently, I thought I would make another quick plug for my favourite online resource, which is the BWB Texts online collection. They're perfect little bites for lockdown reading, and particularly for study for those students who are stuck at home and are trying to work on their social studies or their critical thinking, you know, papers. I'm just thinking of the subjects that my boys are doing right now. They're guaranteed available any time that you're online, and they are actually specifically designed for reading on a mobile device or a phone, so you can get up with the play on whatever the hot button topics are of the moment and then get on to the next book and really in no time, because they're short and really focused.
Yep, they are great, aren't they?
They are. Today I've just picked out two titles from that, and they're written by women who've really knocked it out of the park in their fields. There are plenty of others to choose from that are looking at issues of gender equality, and also those written by Aotearoa's finest wahine, including titles by Marilyn Waring, Jade Kake, and of course superstar scientist Susie Wiles as well.
Yes.
The two I've chosen, the first one I'm going to speak to you about is Hopes Dashed, The Economics of Gender and Inequality by Prue Hyman. Now, this was published in 2017, and it's a short, sharp update on her 1994 book, Women in Economics, A New Zealand Feminist Perspective. It looks at issues around economic equality for women, how they've changed, and also where they haven't in the time since her last big book was published. Now, she acknowledges that women's education levels and their job opportunities have increased overall, but because of disproportionate representation in those unpaid, low-paid and often part-time jobs, the gender wage gap has really reduced only very slowly over more than a 20-year period. I had a look to see if it was still the case in 2021, and it's really that gap has just stalled at about just over 9% since 2017, so not good. But she also reminds us that if you focus on that figure, that's actually masking the fact that the wage gap for Māori and Pacific women is much wider again, and that they also spend more time than most doing unpaid work benefiting their community. So, you know, with family, church, kōangareo, and so many other areas. Prue Hyman is really passionate about the power of unions and collective action, and she shows how economic policy that is aimed at the general populace, like raising the minimum wage and support for the living wage, really are helping the gender wage gap from growing any wider. So, you know, lots of support there for that. And she mentions the pay equity case that was led by Christine Bartlett for carers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was ongoing at the time. So I'm really glad to say that, you know, that one had a happy ending, and it's launched more successful pay equity claims as well. So, you know, that's kudos there. Wonderful thing. One thing that she really worries about, though, is that that we'll achieve a 50% where women occupy half the jobs at all levels, but that nothing else structurally changes. So for her, it's all about a large-scale structural change. That's what she'd really like to see, is that, you know, compassion and cooperation are put above individualism, really, in our society. So, yeah. This is her dream, and we hope it happens.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, and she's a great writer. Yeah, so that's a one to recommend. Now, speaking of cooperation as opposed to individualism, there's one that I'd like to talk about, and this is a great book by Dr. Melanie Arnai, and it's The Platform, The Radical Legacy of the Polynesian Panthers, published last year. And actually, you were telling me a bit about that this morning, weren't you?
Yes, this is actually the last publication of BWB Text. It came out late last year. And this is Dr. Arnai's personal story of her membership and involvement in the Polynesian Panther Movement in its founding years between 1971 and 1974. And then her return to the movement after 30 years out of it. So, Dr. Arnai, she grew up in sort of Newton, Grey Lynn, Ponsonby and Kay Road in the 60s and 70s. And she was a first-generation Samoan New Zealander with lots of family expectations around being a good girl. She was attending church. She was caring for her very, very sick mother. And she was also hitting those academic heights as the only non-Pākehā girl in her form in that final year of school.
Yeah, because she went to Auckland Girls.
Yes, she did. She did. Now, she had real tragedy strike. She lost 7 members of her immediate family in a plane crash when she was in high school, and her mother died of cancer. And she was really, really hit hard by this, and she went looking for a sort of sense of community and a purpose, and she ended up joining the Polynesian Panthers when she was just 17 years old without telling her father. She was really drawn to their commitment to educate, to liberate, and all the work that they were doing to end disparities and discrimination that she was seeing happening in her own community. And they also had a real focus on empowerment of Pacific peoples. So this is a really good little primer of all those different strands of work of the Panthers that they were involved in. They ran so many things, didn't they, Alison?
Yeah, they did, and because they ran homework centres, they really believed in educating, so the homework centres for the after school kids, they did a lot of legal aid type of groups, and they had publications that I think they sort of had underground presses that published things like, you know, what to do if you're arrested and accused of being an overstayer, that sort of thing. And they used to visit rest homes and give concerts to the elderly folk there, who were mainly Palani. And so these residents in the facilities would say things like, "Oh, so you speak English?" Incredible to hear that, because these young folk were all born in New Zealand.
That's right.
Of course they were going to be fluent in English.
That's right. They had a real focus as well on trying to, because they did have a number of ex-gang members and gang members in the Polynesian Panthers, so part of their community building was all about sort of showing that, you know, community activism could be produced by people who were, ostensibly on the outside of, outsiders kind of group, I suppose.
Yes.
But they did... as well as those sorts of community building things, they were really working in the areas of passive resistance and, of course, civil disobedience when it was needed. So they were involved in countering and highlighting that racism that was inherent in the policies leading to the Dawn Raids that really, really affected the overstayers from the Pacific in a way that, you know, the overstayers from the UK, who were apparently the largest group of overstayers in New Zealand, were never, of course, subjected to. And so there's some really interesting stories about how they did that.
In the book, she connects her work in the Panthers to its roots in Pacific culture and practice, and she talks about how it had a long-lasting effect on her life. She's continued her work by teaching Polynesian Panthers history and awareness programs in schools, and she's works as the senior lecturer in Pacific Studies at the University of Auckland, and in her role there she's done so much work. She's particularly developed and taught courses focusing on, or teaches courses focusing on, ethnic identity journeys for people who have grown up in Aotearoa and people who have also moved from the islands to be in Aotearoa, and how they sort of manage that. Yeah. In terms of the gender side of things, you know, she really liked the fact that the Panthers structure was formalised equality between men and women. That was really an important part of it for her. But she does note that the sisters of the movement haven't always been given that equal recognition and kudos for all the work that they did behind the scenes. She actually met the Black Panthers when she was visiting the US and brought home resources for the Polynesian Panthers, and sort of created stronger connections between the two groups as well.
Yeah, oh, how interesting.
Yeah, she made some really interesting points about those sort of cultural complexities of being a Samoan woman butting up against Palangi feminism. Yeah, so she's got some interesting points to make about that. And she also talks a bit about the solidarity that the Panthers had with Māori and tangata whenua, and particularly Manawahine. And yeah, and what how she's gained strength from those relationships going forward as well. Yeah.
Yes.
So, really good little read that. Really readable. And yeah, very timely. It's the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Polynesian Panthers this year.
Yes. Yeah. And oh, what an interesting, and she's doing such important work, isn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And of course, there is currently an exhibition honouring the Polynesian Panthers, running as part of the Auckland Arts Festival until the 25th of March. And that's at the Auckland Studio One, Toy Two, and it's called Polynesian Panthers Dawn Raids, Educate to Liberate.
That's right. Yeah, and Pauline Smith, who wrote My New Zealand Story, Dawn Raid, which is a really fabulous children's book, has been really instrumental in bringing that to life with her research and her interviews. So, yeah. Absolutely one to visit once everything's back open again. That's in Ponson Bay.
Yeah, oh no, really worth a visit. Now, just travelling to the other end of the world, not that we really can at the moment, but taking us up to the north of Alaska, I've just been reading a really interesting one called Raising Ourselves, a Gwich'in coming-of-age story from the Yukon River by a writer called Thelma Wallace. And it's available in the libraries in hard copy. Now, this is so interesting. Thelma Wallace was born in 1960, and she was one of 13 children, and they lived in a two-room log cabin in the remote area of Alaska called Fort Yukon, which it was a village, and it only had about 600 or so people in its population.
Wow.
And Thelma's father died when she was only 13, and so she had to leave school to help her mother raise the younger siblings. So, as I say, she was one of 13 kids. And they basically, their life was ruled really by living off the land and trying to stay warm, of course. So the chopping wood, getting water from the river, moose hunting, that'd be scary. fur trapping, taking care of your dogs, because that was a huge relationship. And the Gwich'in people for thousands of years really had been migratory people, mm-hmm. But a couple of generations before the 1960s, the people had settled in this Yukon area. And that changed everything for them when they stopped being nomadic.
Mm.
But she discovers and writes so well about it, about when they sort of stopped the way they did, they surrendered their language and their traditional values and their religion, basically, to the white teachers and missionaries and traders. And, of course, usual story, they got wiped out by the flu epidemics that raged through the areas. In a way, and they felt like strangers in their own land. So it's a really sobering and gritty story, but there's a lot of laughter in it too. Grief, laughter, and hope. So what I really like about Vilma Wallace, though, is that she was always such an avid reader. Somehow she managed to, even though she had to leave school so early, she managed to read, and it's the reading that has saved her, I think. She's written quite a few other books, and she's transcribed a lot of Northern Alaskan legends into books. So in a way, she's saved so much of their culture. So I just think she's an amazing woman.
She sounds wonderful. Well, that's a massive achievement.
Absolutely, yeah. So going to a younger woman who's also amazing.
And yeah, a little bit further south, hey.
Yes, just a bit further south, is the amazing 22-year-old Amanda Gorman, poet and activist. Now, people may recognise the name because she read that amazing poem at Joe Biden's inauguration.
Yes.
And the poem is called The Hill We Climb. She's an amazing young woman. Her work focuses on issues of oppression, feminism, race, marginalisation, as well as the African diaspora in the United States and beyond. She was the first person to be named the National Youth Poet Laureate in the state, and that was in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
She was a published poet already by then. She went to Harvard. I think her twin sister might have gone to Harvard as well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So delivering that poem, The Hill We Climb, was such an amazing experience to witness that.
Absolutely. It was a standout, wasn't it?
Yeah, she just did so well. We'll include a link to that performance on our blog post. So she's a bestseller now. Her poetry is just selling like anything, as you can imagine. And then she's been highlighted in Time magazine's 100 People to Watch under the category of phenoms. I was going to ask you earlier, actually. I guess does that mean like phenomenal people?
I guess. I might be a bit old to know what that means, but it sounds like that.
Yes. And she's just such an amazing woman. And she said quite seriously that she does intend to run for president in 2036. So I think go for her, you know.
Can't wait. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. And just a tiny little piece from that amazing poem that she delivered. I won't do it justice, but she says, and I'll try and read this in a way that is okay. We, the successors of a country and a time, were a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother, can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one.
Oh, that is lovely.
Amazing, isn't it? Now, the book of the poem is due to be published soon. It's this month sometime. So I can't wait for the libraries to get that. I know we'll buy masses of copies.
Oh, fabulous. Well, on a related presidential note, there's also Becoming a version that's been adapted for young readers by Michelle Obama that's just been released a couple of days ago. So that'll be arriving in the libraries too. So if you enjoyed Becoming and you want to pass it on to younger people in your family, get in the queue for that one as well as The Hill We Climb.
I just had a couple of quick short shout outs for books of speeches by women of not a certain age, but just of their own age. I've got one at either end of the age spectrum. Mm. Both have loud voices and both not afraid to speak out. So the first one is Women in Power, a Manifesto by Mary Beard. Now, Professor Mary Beard is 66 years old slash young, and she's a professor of classics at Cambridge University, and she's an author, and she's a TV star. Women in Power is a little pocket-sized book of two lectures that she's presented in the last 5 years, The Public Voice of Women and Women in Power. She looks at the long history of women's voices being silenced from ancient Greece to women's higher voices being described as shrill, whiny and strident, particularly for politicians, and looking at Twitter shoutdowns and getting criminal threats via her DMs. Luckily, Mary Beard is a troll slayer par excellence. So, yeah, someone to definitely follow on Twitter and to keep an eye on. My second is Greta Thunberg's No One Is Too Small to Make a Difference. This was republished in 2019 as an expanded collection of 16 of Greta Thunberg's speeches, including probably her most famous, Our House Is on Fire. Now, Greta was just 15, 16 years old when she was delivering these in parliaments and in front of huge audiences of very influential people all across the world. And, of course, she inspired a global youth movement. Now, you might not, you know, dive in and read all 16. I would say just dip into a few of them to get one of those invigorating shots of youthful, righteous anger, her clear vision and that lesson on how to speak truth to power. Now, both of these titles are available as Overdrive ebooks, and Greta's is also available in e-audio if you want to hear it from her directly.
Sounds good. Yes, it's often good to hear the actual writer, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So I was just going to quickly talk about another one I've been reading, and this is one that's good to dip in and out of as well. And it's called The Book of Gutsy Women, and it's by Hillary and Chelsea Clinton. So in this one, Hillary and Chelsea share stories of the gutsy women who've inspired them, because you've got to admit that both Hillary and her daughter Chelsea are strong, strong, achieving women.
Absolutely.
And they're women who've got the courage to stand up to the status quo, to ask tough questions and get the job done, even if it makes you unpopular in the process. Hillary says that, you know, growing up she hardly knew any women who worked outside the home, but her heroes were her mother, her teachers, and then people like Amelia Earhart. You know, just amazing women like that. And Chelsea talks a lot about, of course, growing up much later than mum. The world was a bit different, but there was still, she could still see that, that there was a lot of work to still be done, and that women often have to overcome, you know, that sort of really tough resistance to get jobs done. So the book is great. They've got masses of activists, strong women, writers, LGBTQ trailblazers, you name it. They've got it. I really recommend it. It's a great one to dip in and out of when you need as you say, a shot of courage.
Awesome.
And as the top twins say, sometimes you got to stand up and you got to have guts. So,
wiser words never spoken.
Yes, that's right. So, look, on that note, have a gutsy day, Inuka. And to our listeners, look, thanks for tuning in today, and take good care of yourselves, won't you? Stay strong. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Haere rā, ka kite anō.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM. or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond.